Blog Talk Radio.
Last night I saw a lunar eclipse in the sky, and something happened in my mind's eye. I saw you in a whole different light. Clearly, really, it's not that I want you to change. It's more that I want you to stay the same.
Oh, and I really do want you to stay the same. I want you to stay right here with me for the next hour. I'm selfish that way, you know. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio Red, kind of short and curly, but definitely red. Here we are on Long Island, New York. It's almost dusk. Yes, the days are getting a little shorter, boo-hoo, but it's lovely and cool here on Long Island. Beautiful sunny day. I know somebody who had a lot of hours of tennis and backgammon at the park, but we won't mention any names. Twasn't I twas working. I am bringing you two very interesting guests tonight. As usual, they have absolutely nothing to do with each other's topics, but you know I will always find a link. By the way, the name of my little corner of the world here for the next hour is Read My Lips, and you know you're going to have to listen because you can't see mine or my guests. But I think they're fascinating, they're smart, they have very interesting topics, and there's something for everyone on today's show. First up, we're going to be speaking with Patrick A. Strube. He's got all kinds of letters after his name. I'll have to ask him what they mean, CHFC, CLU, RFC. I'm clueless. We'll find out. Patrick is a locally well-known financial educator. He's written in the Lexington Chronicle, and he's been featured in the Columbia Business Monthly, and he's been teaching investors age 50-plus, we know who we are, how to preserve our assets, increase our income, and reduce income taxes. The name of his book, in case you're interested, is Save Your Retirement from Mass Destruction by Seven Retirement Villains. I'll give you a clue. We have Ella, Lady Longevity. Laura, not you, Lady Longevity. Laura's one of our loyal listeners. There's another L. The Invisible Enemy. I won't tell you who that one is, but it starts with the letter I. Evil Uncle Sam. Okay, don't get carried away. It's not a political show. Sarah Self-Pay. Think about the self-pay part. Iceberg Ivan, ooh, we'll have to talk about him. Systematic Sammy and Antiquated Andy. These are the villains who are going to try to destroy your retirement, and Patrick Strube is the smart guy who will tell us how to get rid of the villains and make sure they go away from our door. I'm particularly interested because there's a big birthday coming up this year. So we'll be talking to Pat in the first half of the show. Second half, we're going to talk about style, fashion, essential style. I'm going to talk to a lovely lady named Bobby Schwartz, and in her book she has a very interesting quote from Yves Saint Laurent, and Yves Saint Laurent says, fashions fade, style is eternal. Aha! Bobby is a fashion consultant. She helps some of the world's wealthiest men and women figure out how to put together the most fabulous wardrobe. I didn't say the most expensive, although sometimes it is on the spendy side. But what is essential for you? You may not be in that elite group, but what will make you look best, feel best? Ladies, how to go into the boardroom with the right accessories, without your purse, by the way, without derailing your career. Bobby Schwartz has great ideas about binge shopping and clearance shopping and all that good stuff that we love to do. Might not be best for your wallet or your budget or your wardrobe or your image. We're going to learn from the pro. She's a stylist, author, and fashion expert, and her book is Style Essentials, Build Your Ultimate Wardrobe. I love anything with ultimate on it. Let me do a couple of introductions here. You all know what comes next. I'm going to read you the famous birthdays for the day, some movie reviews, and my shout-outs. First of all, I love you more and more each day to my Lorna, my Dune, Mr. Monk, and hello, Stephen. Kaylee, my beautiful Kaylee, my big kahuna, Tag the Artist, my dancer, my violinist, and Dr. Pepper, of course. A big hello to lovely Laura. Hello to Surprise, ran into them in the park at the Alexis P. Souter Blues Concert at Stepping Stone Waterside Theater in Great Neck last night. Ran into Melissa and Andrew and their guests, Lenny and Jackie, on the lawn having dinner. We sat with them. Lovely. Hello and big hug to my AZ. What did I see this week? Last night, saw a 3-hour and 11-minute movie. If you can find it on demand in HD, why not? Wyatt Earp, 1994, Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman, a cast of dozens of recognizable names and faces. Long but a very interesting story of Mr. Earp and his Earp family. Earp, Earp. Okay, and now celebrity birthdays. What a day for celebrity birthdays, August 26th. Macaulay Culkin, all grown up. He was born in 1980, Home Alone. Branford Marsalis and the Marsalis Family, musician and band leader, born in 1960. How about singer Bob Cousill in 1949? George Gibbs, the singer, 1920. Ruth will remember that. Albert Sabin, the polio researcher and the Sabin Oral polio vaccine founder, Albert Sabin, 1906. Peggy Guggenheim, the patron and art collector extraordinaire, 1898. And, ooh, boo hiss, John Wilkes Booth, the actor and assassin, 1838. Do not send him a birthday card. Okay, let's get down to business here. What's eating away at your retirement? Are you ignorant? Do you think you're planning something wonderful and gliding along? Will Social Security be there for you? Will retirement funds be there for you? Will your pension be there for you? Will Medicaid do a damn thing for you? Who's pulling at the purse strings? I'm going to introduce my first guest now, Patrick Struby. Patrick is a financial preservation specialist. Patrick, welcome to Read My Lips. How are you, Pat?
I am wonderful, Bonnie, and I love that introduction. Thank you very much.
Which one was it, the celebrity birthdays, the movies, or just Patrick Struby?
I loved all of it, but I loved how you read the title of the book with such passion. You know, sometimes people say it real dry, and it's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be interesting, so that's
it
great.
It is fun, and, you know, you did something so unusual in your – may I call you Pat instead of Patrick? Can we be on a first
– Absolutely.
Partial first name, but don't call me Bon. I don't like that, so I'll be Bonnie. You'll be Pat. Okay, the Bonnie
okay.
and Pat show. Here we go. Listen, first thing you open the book, you don't see the copyright page. You don't see the title page. You don't see the publisher's page. You see – Meet the Seven Retirement Villains. I love it, Pat, because you got me right into the story already. Now, question for you, before we get into the depths of your background and your expertise, how did you come up with the idea of the Seven Retirement Villains? Is that your construction, your creation, or does this come from somewhere else?
It was dumb luck. I
like
started
you better
writing
already.
The book. Yeah, I started writing the book like any other financial book, and it was kind of like a textbook of here's what to do and what not to do. And I started reading back through it, and I was like, wow, this is really boring. And I don't know if it came to me in a dream or if it, but I something struck me, and I thought of this idea of villains, and of course I get to make myself a retirement superhero, and I thought, oh, that would be so much fun. So it took a little work to actually work it into a storyline, and it was a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and there's nothing wrong with making a serious book fun. We know that. We all know that. We all remember commercials from TV and radio when we were kids, but we can't remember what we ate for breakfast or where we put the keys to the other car, if we have another car, and all that good stuff. So fun and games and mnemonics and cartoons all works well, and I think you have a smart approach. What I like even more is that you're using in your storyline a couple named Dick and Jane. God, Patrick, I don't know if you're the same age bracket as I am, honey, but we read Dick and Jane, the story of Dick and Jane, and what was it, Spot and Fluff and all those good characters.
Yep.
That was the primary reader when I was in first grade. God, am I dating myself. And you're saying, meet the residents of Metropolis, Dick and Jane. Dick is 55, Jane is 53, and you go into where they work and what they do, and poor Dick feels such responsibilities planning feverishly for retirement, but he's an ignoramus when it comes to retirement, and then they start having these crazy, wild nightmares and dreams. They can't walk, eat, sleep, talk, drink, think, and these villains are appearing in their life and scaring the you-know-what out of them. I think it was a clever way to do it. Now, Pat, what I would like to do, first of all, is give us a little bit of the background. Tell the story about your grandpa, the charming story, the sad story of your grandpa and his declining health and his wonderful intentions of buying you a car when you were 16, but Mommy got on the phone and said, Pat, Grandpa doesn't have any money. So tell us that background a little bit, Pat, and then let's go dive into the seven heroes, the villains. Would you like to do that?
Awesome, yeah.
And I said heroes by mistake because they're not heroes. They're heroes of their own construct, which might be they're heroes of the pension funds that don't want to be around, they're heroes of the government, they're heroes of the people who don't want to give you what you've saved your life for. Right?
That's
so,
true. Yes.
$7. So tell us Grandpa's story and a little bit about your financial background, and then we'll launch into our seven villains, Pat Struby.
Fabulous. I was 16. I hadn't really thought about what I wanted to be when I grew up or anything like that, which is probably pretty normal, I guess. And My grandfather lived about 5 hours away, so we'd see him a couple of times a year. And I knew he had suffered a stroke years before, and he was in a nursing home. But he was still fine as far as, you know, day-to-day and good memory and things like that. And out of the blue, you know, he would give me, you know, maybe 10 or 20 bucks at Christmas or something like that. But he'd never done any grand gestures. And out of the blue, when I was turning 16, he was calling. We were having a regular talk. And he said, you know, for such a close relationship we'd had for my whole life, he said he wanted to do something special and he wanted to buy me a car. And, you know, I almost fell over because
nice
I had
papa.
No idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was literally, if you can imagine, the most surprising gift, you know, completely unexpected. I had no expectations of having a car or anything like that. So we end up talking longer, and he's explaining, you know, there's a used car lot down the road next time I'm in town, all these types of things. And I am just floating. I'm so excited.
Of course.
And then after the phone call ends, you know, he tells my mom. And what had happened was my mom was the person in charge of his finances.
Mm-hmm.
And she was handling, you know, how to pay the nursing home and things like that. And I got my first lesson in retirement finance at 16. She said, it's great that your grandpa wants to buy you a car. And he used to have a lot of money, but he doesn't have any anymore.
Mm.
And it was quite a shock. And it was, as bad as it was for me, I'm sure it hurt my grandfather far more because he had, you know, he was like, you know, most of the greatest generation. He worked his whole life. He served in the military. He saved money. He was a farmer his whole life. He had lots of farmland. And unfortunately, many years in a nursing home, spent it all away. And it was really eye-opening to me. I can't say at 16 I said I'm going to be a retirement financial planner and save people's money, or I can't say that. But it was one of those moments that struck me. And as I started going through college and was taking finance classes, that's when things started clicking. And I said, you know, this is something that I can really have a passion for, and really, you know, maybe do for the rest of my life.
Pat, I don't think it's that uncommon to have an event happen in the family. I know my daughter wanted to be a physician from a very early age, 10 or 11. That was her passion. She derailed a couple times, but she's now a pediatric GI specialist, helping kids every day, doing really good, fine work. And I'm very proud of her. But she saw my dad, her beloved Grandpa Joe, having heart attacks when she was just a little girl. And she saw kids getting sick and falling on the playground at school. And she said, I want to help them. I want to help my grandpa. I want to come up with some of the answers. Well, she didn't become a geriatrician, but she did become a pediatrician. And her interest was generated by seeing something in the family. It's like, I want to solve that problem. I want to be one of the people who helps people recover from health issues. So I think it's not uncommon at all. And I love your story because you ultimately learned what happened to your grandpa rather than blaming him. Oh, my crappy grandpa, look, he made a promise, but keep it, that kind of junk. You said, what happened here? Let me figure out how to help other people's grandpas from getting in the same situation. That's a good heart, Pat. I think that's a good heart, and I'm glad to hear that. I like the story. So now let's get into our strange people with the strange visions, the apparitions, the Dick and Jane of the modern world, who are in their early 50s, and here is Dick, and he's just going to waltz off into the sunset with Jane, and they're going to do everything right. Let's start off first, Pat, with how did Dick get lulled into complacency or down the wrong path of planning? What were some of the common misperceptions, perhaps, that he had that might be what my listeners are thinking right now about, oh, retirement's easy, and I very well could be one of those people, Pat. So what was he lulled by? And then let's go through one of the villains, each villains at a time. And we have, let's see, we have 15 minutes left before we bring on Bobby, so we're going to do a speed test through the seven villains. So go, Pat, you start.
Awesome. I think there's two thoughts that come to mind. It's a great, great question, by the way, as a starting point. There's two thoughts that are very different that I have as far as why they would be lulled into a false sense of security. And the first is we are bombarded every day by anyone who listens to the radio or TV or reads the paper, and almost everything that the media talks about financially has nothing to do with planning your retirement or knowing if you've got a smart plan or will be able to retire. It's all about what's going on in today's finances, the stock market, interest rates, mortgages on and on and on and just beat you over the head. And so mm-hmm. most people that I've met that I've helped, they think a financial planner is just going to invest their money. And that's part of the beauty of this book, you know, of these seven villains. Many of them have nothing to do with investing. Mm-hmm. And so it's very valuable to realize that there's far more there than just that. And the second thing I would say, and this isn't any revolutionary thought, but it is so important for people to understand that two of the mainstays of retirement, you know, if your parents or grandparents retired comfortably, they probably had Social Security running smoothly for them, and they may have, there's a very good chance they may have had a company or government pension paying them out money every month. And both of those, as you've alluded to already tonight, both of those are struggling mightily right now. And it's so important for people to, you know, take control for themselves and understand who these villains are and protect themselves.
Pat, what about somebody who had a government job and worked for 30 years or so and retired early in their 50s on a pension, a work pension through whatever state agency they were employed by for those decades? Is that going to be secure forever? Are those doomed, or is that an individual by individual fund basis?
Great question. I would say very individual. There are unfortunately been cities that have already declared bankruptcy on their pensions, and people that were retired, their checks stopped, which is a terrifying
Ooh.
Thought, really.
Ooh, yeah.
And you know, we've seen what's happened with Detroit recently. No one knows what's going to happen with those pensions yet. There is a federal government entity that's supposed to back corporate pensions that go bankrupt, but there's limits on that. And, of course, if many, many corporate pensions go bankrupt, there's limits to what the government can do. So count your blessings if you have a pension, but be aware that I don't think any of them that you could say is foolproof.
And in your professional opinion, before we dive into the seven villains, how safe is Social Security? How social is it going to be, let's say, in the next 10 years? I've heard doom and gloom reports going on for years now, Pat. What do you think?
Well, I'll give you both sides. I think it's going to be fine for a while, and I think it'll always be there in some form. However, I will say, without a shadow of a doubt, I've heard people argue different points here. Anyone who says there really is a trust fund is lying. There's been $2.5 trillion of tax money for Social Security over the last 30 years, and the government has spent every penny of it. And that's isn't that nice of them?
We gave them an allowance, and look what they did with it. They bought the car.
Yes, it was the tax was designed because the government was smart enough to know that, hey, the baby boom generation is coming. We got to have money set aside. And
yeah,
then
right.
One by one, every one of the Congress people and the presidents just took the opportunity to just dump that money right in the budget and spend it along with everything else.
Wonderful. Okay, nice to know they're in charge. Okay, I'm going to bring up one quick point from page 5 of your book. You talk about the three legs of the stool, ERISA, which is the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, passed in 1974, yada, yada. And you say the three legs of the stool, which people could count on for their retirement traditionally, were your Social Security, we talked about that, a worker's own savings, hello, listen to that one, and a company pension plan. And as you point out in the book, more and more companies are finding ways to stop their pension plans because they know we have IRAs, and we have KEOs, and we have SEPs, and we're putting away this and that. So they're basically saying, oh, you're smart. You know how to do it. Why would we bother? Is that the trend, Pat, that pension plans
that's
are
that's exactly
stopping?
Right. It's a perfect segue into the first villain as well, because the first villain is Lady Longevity. The other reason they're getting out of those pensions is they're saying, holy cow, these people are living way too long. When someone retires at 60 and lives to 95, you know darn well those companies didn't save enough money to pay them out 35 years of retirement benefits.
So they're counting on us getting sick and dying and some insurance kicking in. And if you're healthy, you're never going to get that insurance payout if you don't go in a nursing home, if you don't have a long-term care issue. And I'm going to ask you before we finish about your take on long-term care insurance, but not right now. So Lady Longevity, she's evil. She says, of course we want to live a long, healthy life, but Lady Longevity puts an evil spin on your wish. She wants to try to make you ignore the possibility of a long life in your retirement plan, therefore leaving you penniless and without choices if you outlive your money. And she's going, chortle, chortle, chortle. I am truly evil. I want you to live a long life, and you're going to be poor, broke, and shocked. Why is she so evil? Okay.
Well, I think that's a good summary of it. You know, I have so many clients over the years that'll joke that say, you know, help me make sure I don't run out of money. And they have two jokes. They'll either say, I don't want to be a Walmart greeter, or they'll say, I don't want to eat cat food. Those are the two things everyone always jokes about.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's a joke out of fear, too, because they really don't want to do either of those things.
Of course.
You know, I'll give you one statistic. I'm not going to bore you with a ton of statistics, but if you're a married couple age 65 today, it's a coin flip if one of you will live to at least 92, is what they're saying. So you've got 27 years of retirement income that you've got to have. And you think about, you know, what happened when our parents and grandparents retired. That's not at all what anyone was expecting. So it just means we've got to have that nest egg in order.
We have to plan. It's got to be a big golden egg. Okay, number two, the invisible enemy. And I said I was the key word here. What's the I word here, Patrick, the invisible enemy? Who is it?
It's inflation. And, of course, he's the invisible enemy because you don't think about him. You don't see him every day. And he really goes hand in hand with lady longevity because inflation over the course of a year, big whoop, who cares? But if you live 10, 15, 20, 30 years in retirement, inflation could eat dramatically into your lifestyle. So if you retire with, say, a $50,000 income and you're very comfortable, well, in 20 years, that might only buy half as much anymore. And now you may have problems making ends meet. So it has to be part of something you consider as part of that retirement income plan.
Very interesting. And I'll ask you a side question here, Pat. Are more and more people working way past the traditional, I put that in quotes, traditional age of retirement of, what, 62, 65, because they want to or because they have to have active income to keep building that nest egg?
Yeah, I see both. I see people that are 65 and they just haven't come close to saving enough. And I do have clients that are comfortably, we've put them on a course where they can retire comfortably, but they're not that type of person. You know, some of us aren't the type to sit back on the rocking chair sipping lemonade. You know, sometimes people just love to be active and work. So we see both.
Yep, okay. I'm the other one. I'm the one who wants to work and never plans to leave, never plans to stop.
I am too. I like it too much.
I know people who are in their early 80s who are physically in horrible condition and still go to work, even if they have to have a driver take them and go to work because it mentally keeps them sharp. It's their life. They built a company. They're not hogging the limelight or bossing people around. They just need that stimulation, and they choose to get out of their own way, their own pain, and go to work as often as they can. Of course, the company's not relying on them being there every day, but they are part of that line of the ascendancy line, the family line, and they're still welcome, and they go. Even though they could comfortably stay home and just sit and say, God, I feel like crap, they'd rather get dressed, put the briefcase on, and go to work. And you have to respect that. It's something to do. It says something for our mental acuity and our willingness to keep working and keep going. I like that. Okay, number three, evil Uncle Sam. Well, that's not a debatable point anymore. I don't know anybody who loves that uncle, but I don't know who the aunt is on the other side of that marriage. But evil Uncle Sam, why is he one of the seven retirement villains in your book, Patrick?
Yes, and as you probably are not shocked to hear, he has to do with extra taxes and retirement. And it really kind of ties into things like Social Security. Most people who aren't retired don't realize that back in the early 80s, they instituted a tax on Social Security benefits. So even though you're paying taxes to fund Social Security your entire working life, guess what? Good old Uncle Sam is going to tax you again if your income is at certain levels. And so there are a few different taxes that can hit you in retirement that are totally different than what happens when you're working. In fact, there was someone who once said it's almost like there's two different tax codes, one for working, one for retired. So I wanted to have the chapter there to just say, hey, you know, the old nugget, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. We have to be smart about not only investing properly and having a plan, but we all also want you to end up with most of it and not have evil Uncle Sam taxing it all away from you.
Right, and I know you have some, I'm looking at all kinds of figures and charts here. Don and Joan, we've got another couple. We've left Dick and Jane, we're staying with D and J. We've got Don and Joan. Two tax problems, their total taxes. Every additional dollar they bring in is taxed two times, the income tax and the tax on Social Security benefits, and whereas they would normally pay maybe 25% income tax, so 25 cents on the dollar, the tax on Social Security is another 21, so they'd end up paying 46 cents out of every dollar earned. a double dip
it's
bite.
It's nasty, isn't it? Yeah.
Beyond nasty. And, it's a real shock, Pat. Go ahead.
And here's the sad thing about that. If you've never saved for retirement, you're just going to live on Social Security. That's obviously not going to affect you. If you're independently wealthy like Donald Trump or Bill Gates, it's not going to affect you. Guess who it affects? It's everyone. It's the people in the middle who worked hard and built up a nest egg or have a small pension and are somewhere in that middle ground. That's where that 46% potential tax rate can actually hit you. And so that's one of the things we try and do when we're working with someone individually is to take a look at whether, you know, whether they're planning for retirement or in retirement, take a look at where they're going to fall as far as the retirement income. And you have to make sure you're not in that bracket because it's just disgusting.
And you chose the verb fall very carefully, I know. Now, I'm going to give you a minute apiece for the next four villains so we can give your website,
okay,
and then you can help me introduce Bobby. So, Sarah Selfpay, Selfpay. Who is she, and why does she have such a terrible scowl on her face, Pat?
Yes, and we'll keep that one brief. That one really ties into my grandfather's situation. Basically, right or wrong, the way the rules are set, Medicare covers a great many illnesses, but it has nothing to do with nursing care, and it basically means it's up to us, and it's almost like an illness roulette of, you know, if you have a heart attack and you are hospitalized after 65, Medicare is probably going to cover most of that. If you have a stroke and need to spend months or years in a nursing home, they're probably not going to cover it. Is that logical? I wouldn't say it necessarily is, but that's the system. And so it's a matter of knowing what your options are and having a plan for it again.
Okay. Number five villain is the iceberg Ivan. Ooh, he looks icy and cold, cold-hearted. Who is he? Who is he?
Well, Iceberg Ivan, so this was another brilliant idea I had, I think, when I was in a dream. And the whole thought there is, as I learned in watching the Titanic, 9/10 of any iceberg is actually below the surface and hidden from you. And Iceberg Ivan represents investment fees because the entire system of investments has been designed to hide all the layers of fees. So sometimes you have an investment where you see maybe a $30 a year fee, but they may be charging you 2 or 3 or 4% a year on your money, which can be thousands and thousands of dollars a year. So one of those things I urge people to do is find out more about their investment fees.
Okay, good point. Point of caution there. And number six is Systematic Sammy. She looks like a bear. Oh, a wolf in bear's clothing. So what are we looking
wolf
at?
Wolf in sheep's clothing. That's right.
Right.
I will. I'll give you a speed description here. But the basic idea of this is be very careful of the most simplistic planning. Most people hear is you build up a nest egg, you invest it in stocks and bonds, and then you draw money off of it every month, which sounds logical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the biggest risk you can ever take is taking money every month off of money that can go up and down in value, because what happens is mathematically it always works against you, because eventually things are going to drop in value, and then you're taking more and more money out, and it's almost impossible to get that value back up. So it has to do with having a smart income plan, and so I call Sammy systematic because the last thing we want to do is see your value dropping in retirement.
Okay, thank you. And let's hit number seven here, Antiquated Andy. What is he? Who does he represent?
Yeah, he's a nasty-looking caveman, and he just represents outdated investment advice. So it kind of goes hand-in-hand with Sammy. For generations, we've been told stocks and bonds are where all our money needs to be invested, and many professionals and wealthy people and endowments have proven that there's a better way to invest, and it really just has to do with looking at a lot of different options and being more diversified. So it's about educating yourself on those options.
Okay, two more questions before we get your website. Well, one of those questions will be, what website would you like people to go to? Let's do that first, a little pre-shameless promotion. Pastor, where do you want people to go to read about you and what you do?
Excellent. I'm based out of South Carolina, so the website is SC, as in South Carolina, preservation.com.
I wondered where that came from. I'm going to spell it because I love to spell URLs,
awesome,
especially since yours is short compared to most I get here. So you can skip the www, ladies and gentlemen, in most cases, but we want S for South, C for Carolina, SC, and the word preservation, Preservation, at a .com, and you'll get to Pat Struby's site. Now, Patrick, question of the day. friend of mine said, oh, I hear that all of our friends at a certain age group, mid-late 60s, are getting long-term care insurance. Great idea. I did a little look up online. It said be extra super-duper careful because if you get it and something catastrophic happens to you and you're gone, your kids may never be able to collect on it, that a lot of these plans don't pay till after you've been hospitalized or incarcerated for a long period of time. They might have very specific disclaimers on what kind of care you can have and where you can have it and how many hours a day and the qualifications of the caregiver. Pat, quickly in 1 minute, tell me, what's the scoop with long-term care insurance? Good, bad, ugly, stay away, or go out and buy it now?
I hate to start this way. I hate to start this way, but the answer is it depends. Most financial advisors feel very strongly, almost like it's a religion. Either they're all for it or all against it. I disagree.
Ah.
It very much depends on the situation. We have a lot of clients that opt for it. We have more that don't. What we do with our clients is if they opt not to get the insurance, we just want to have a different plan in place, whether that is to somehow retitle assets and protect some of them, if that's possible, legally, ethically, if that's something that we can do, or there are other types of ways of protecting assets, which would probably be much longer and more boring to talk about than what your next step.
Okay. Well, thank you for the honest answer. I appreciate it. When I read about all of the loopholes and the little things you need to be very smart about and that it doesn't cover things you might think it does, I realized it's something you have to be a buyer beware. Totally, buyer beware, correct? Caveat emptor, buyer beware. Okay, good. So let's give your website one more time, and then you're going to join me. I'm going to turn on the microphone for our second guest, Bobby Schwartz, the lovely Bobby. And so, Patrick, I'm going to tell everybody to go to S for South, C for Carolina, SC Preservation. I spelled it once. I know you all took notes. SCPreservation.com. And you'll see a really cool picture of Pat and his wife, Janelle. Oh, his wife, Ava, is the wife. And Janelle and Carter are your kids, right?
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yep.
Thank God. Okay, and you all love Disney World, obviously. I see the little.
We do.
Yeah. The Indian headdresses you've got on, that's really cool. How's your retirement all set up, Pat? Are you all safe and secure and ready to go off in the sunset one of these days?
I am far from retirement, but I am on track. And like I said, I hope to never retire. Probably the better word for it is financial freedom for someone who wants to be able to work, you know, to have that money set aside in case something changes in your life or for health reasons. So,
right. Good.
Yeah.
I like that plan a lot. So, Pat Struby, I'm so delighted to have met you. Love the book. I'm going to give the title again. It's Save Your Retirement from Mass Destruction by the 7 Retirement Villains. I'm sorry, I can't say it any other way because it's just so cute. But it's a serious topic, but I like the lighthearted approach. So I'm turning on Ms. Bobby Schwartz's microphone, and on the count of 3, Pat Struby and I are going to say together, welcome, Bobby Schwartz. So here we go, Pat. 1, 2, 3. Welcome,
Bobby
Schwartz. Hey, that was the best one
thank
ever.
Thank you.
Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the Bonnie and Pat Show. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was a lot better before he started talking. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I've got to go get this book. Fantastic information.
Good. And you have any questions? Anything hit home? Any of the villains? I'm not going to give you a
pretty much
Bobby.
Every single one of them.
okay.
But I want to get the book, and then Pat, I would love to reach out to you at some point, just to talk to you about this. And I don't know if you have clients long distance or not, but
we do, and would be happy to. Absolutely, looking forward to hearing your chat here in a few minutes.
Thank you, Pat. Very, very nice. Very gracious of both of you on both sides. So Pat's going to hang in the background. Pat, I'm not going to ask you about the LBD, the little black dress, but we might ask you what your wife does about her little black dress. And I'm going to do a deep dive with Bobby now because I'm very intrigued. Bobby, one thing I noticed in your book, and I want to get in your background in just a second here, but I noticed in your book is you have a lot of very high-end brands you're recommending for the style essentials for the basic wardrobe. So this might be something we might talk to you about in terms of maybe they need to see Pat first and preserve their income so they can afford these clothes. But I think you also have mid-range and even lower-range price point alternatives. But let's talk to Bobby Schwartz. So, Bobby Schwartz, I'm looking at your one sheet. You're a lovely lady, beautiful, bright, sparkling eyes, and gorgeous blonde hair. And I noticed you're in a very nice jewel neckline white top. I can almost tell what brand it is and off in the picture. And it looks like a black jacket and a little tiny, I think it's a quarter to a half inch gold hoop earring. Very, very simple, very natural makeup. So, Bobby Schwartz, who are you? What makes you a style maven? How do you know what savvy chic is versus anybody on the street? And don't even ask me because I have no clue. So, Bobby, tell us, who are you first, and then we're going to dive into your book, please.
Okay, who I am, I actually began as a school teacher who couldn't make ends meet, and I fell into fashion. Naturally, I had always been best dressed here and there, but it's, you know, I never considered it an occupation until I think I fell into it the third time. I went, oh, maybe this is my new direction. But I've held almost every position you could possibly have in the fashion industry. I've worked for the top fashion houses in the world, three of them, and I've been out on my own as a stylist for over 10 years. My focus is timeless dressing, which Patrick will love. And I'm all about saving money, too. I grew up in the right neighborhoods, going to the right schools, and not having a lot of disposable income. And I learned to be a bargain shopper from early on.
Mm-hmm.
So though I do believe in value, and, you know, having worked for Neiman's, I'll just name a couple of them, and Ralph Lauren, I can tell you, and you could walk in my closet today, and there are clothes in there that are 20 years old that I can still wear, and people think is brand new.
You mentioned that in the book, and I was intrigued. You're talking about, of course, the cashmere black coat and the trench coat, mm-hmm. and all the good stuff. Those are timeless. The belts, you say belts never wear it, go out, get the best, and you actually give the type, the style, the kind of buckle, the kind of fabric. And so you're talking about, when you say timeless dressing and timeless chic, you mean, I hear the word, one of Patrick will understand this word, invest. Invest in a wardrobe that will last you. So my first question to you, Bobby, is, some people don't want a wardrobe that lasts. They want to do the next style every year, every season. That's their fun. So how do you justify or how do you validate the importance of timeless, meaning what will last from season to season, versus let's go out and fun, have fun and let's do the latest colors and everything? So where, how do those two juxtapose, Bobby Schwartz?
Very, very easily, because I would tell them to do it in their play wardrobe, in their casual goof-around wardrobe, where Target can be your best friend, H&M, Forever 21. I mean, where you really just don't put a lot into it, or you do the discounters. Off Fifth, Saks Off Fifth has the best contemporary casual department of any place I've pretty much seen. I mean, because the prices, the money you save is just, it's unbelievable. And it will make you so that you will never go buy a pair of Citizens of Humanity jeans again at full price when you can pick them up there for $59 or $70, something like that.
Yeah,
versus
you're talking,
the almost $200 that they are in the retailer.
Now. Yes, you're talking. Okay,
we are. I am.
This is
but
what I wanted
pieces,
to bring up, Bobby, was that you don't have to be wealthy and pay $5,000 for a pair of jeans or even $450. You can have a fun wardrobe that's still, but you're going to give us some advice in this segment on how to have the best casual wardrobe. So what I want to do is I want to read a couple of statistics from your book, if I may, and then I want to have you take us through some of the building of the essential wardrobe and what your job is as a personal stylist. So first, let me read this, please. Each year, Bobby says, people spend billions of dollars on clothing and accessories. In 2006 alone, which we know is 7 years ago but still relevant, the U.S. Census Bureau reported that nearly $215 billion U.S. dollars was spent on such items. But what many people don't realize is that choosing the right clothes can make a world of difference. Clothing is more than just what one happens to throw on for that day. Rather, says Bobby Schwartz, it can make a statement about who you are, what style you possess, and even how bold and successful you may be, and that's the reason for a personal stylist. So most of us, Bobby, cannot afford a personal stylist like you, but what exactly do you do for the clients who can afford you? What's your role?
My role is to help them in all of their wardrobe needs, but my mission with them is to get it so that their wardrobe is so easy to maneuver through that they're easily getting beautifully dressed every day. And there's, you know, a process to it besides going through the closet and cleaning out and finding out where they are, and then based on their lifestyle, helping them create, you know, I create their list of what they need. And then, you know, we do the shopping, and then in the end I make wardrobe cards for them so they don't go back to their old evil ways. And it makes
that.
It very, very simple. So they're not also using only 20% of their wardrobe 80% of the time, but they're using the entire wardrobe. But one of the things that I feel so strongly about is that we as women, Patrick will laugh about this because he's a guy and doesn't suffer from this, but we're like creatures looking at shiny objects. And it's like, oh, looky. Oh, my gosh, how gorgeous. And then, oh, my gosh, sale. And then we end up with a closet full of clothes and nothing to wear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just typical. We, you know, every husband on the planet has listened to his wife complain she has nothing to wear, and he's perplexed. Because he can see that there's a room full of clothes here. And the system, the Style Essentials, helps women get a foundation going so that regardless of what happens, whether it's even if they're stay-at-home moms or if they're, you know, or professionals, it doesn't matter. Everybody owns the same essentials. Now, if you're an attorney, you're obviously going to own more black suits than somebody who only needs one.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these pieces fit in so that someone can invite you to the theater, someone can invite you to a cocktail party, to a luncheon, and you've got
well, you can invite
to
someone
have...
to a you can invite someone
exactly.
to a cocktail party, a luncheon, to the theater if you're a woman of means, and you can be the host. Bobby, I want to stop you for a second and talk about the prevalence of the color black in your book, in your essentials. I noticed
yes.
once in a while brown, rarely gray. I never saw navy blue. Maybe I missed that one. But everything, even when you're talking about the cashmere coat, you say camel is optional, black is essential, the trench coat, the same thing. So, Bobby, with your permission, I just want to read the names of some of the items in this essential wardrobe. And then
okay.
why don't you pick your top three that you think would be important and tell us why so much black. So you talk about the white T-shirt, and we'll talk about that in a minute, obviously not black, the long black cardigan, the crispy white shirt, I love crispy, jeans and belts, everybody. Well, we have to talk about jeans and belts, strappy sandals in black and tan, the fabulous black pump. Patrick and anybody else wondering, a pump is still a high heel shoe, excuse me. Then you talk about the black pointy toe boots, flip-flops. I never thought in a million years I would see flip-flops in an essential fashion wardrobe. Bobby, you can touch on that for just a second or two, and they can be leather. OMG, didn't even know they exist. Ballet flats, I have to wear a heel because of stretching out the back of the foot so many years with high heels, so I can't do flats. Handbags, day bags, and crossbody bags. I didn't even know we had those names. Black pants, the LBD. Patrick now knows that's the little black dress. The black suit, which Bobby mentioned, the classic trench coat in khaki or black, the black cashmere coat. I have a navy midnight blue cashmere coat. Bobby, I don't know if you'd approve of it. Cashmere wraps. I know those can come in white. Black cashmere underpinnings. That's not bra and panties. That's shirts and tops you can wear under everything. Jersey underpinnings in black and white. And accessories. And Bobby lives and dies, I hope not, by the small, tiny gold hoops, the pearl stud earrings, and the great watch. Yes, you don't have to buy a Rolex. She'll tell you what else you can buy. So, Bobby, those are your chapters. So pick three, but you have to cover jeans and belts. And pick two other ones that you'd like to talk about. And then if we have time, we'll do more. So go.
Okay. Well, naturally, the suit you need to have, and I don't necessarily advocate buying them together, but it's certainly a black jacket and a black pant. And do you want me to talk about black now or wait until I get finished?
Yes. Talk about black now. Why so
okay.
much black?
The reason for black is that you cannot, it amps everything up to a more sophisticated level. You just can't goof up with black. And it helps those people who might be style challenged, at least they're in the ballpark. And I just can't say enough, you can mix your blacks, it doesn't matter. You know, growing up, of course, you always heard, oh, no, the blacks never go, don't worry about it. Just, it all looks good together. And
okay.
you can, it just, it's simple, it's chic, and it's fabulous. And I will say about your navy blue, however, there are a few people, you know, statistically, just a few, that can't really wear black, that they're more navy blue people, and for those people, substitute navy for black.
Okay. How do they know? How do they know, Bobby? How do these people know that navy blue is going to work?
Well,
for them
oddly,
in black?
I've had people come to me and say, "I just can't wear black." Mm. And then, you know, so it's often redheads might have a little bit of trouble with black, and they're better. And even if it's a midnight navy, which really passes off as black, it still
yes.
is enough of a blue that it helps their coloring.
That's the color of my car, and it goes great with my red hair.
So see, there you go.
Midnight blue sports car looks great with red. Patrick, you have a comment? Did I hear you saying something?
No, I'm not going to even dare jump in.
He wouldn't even dare. I knew that. Okay, Bobby, so talk about the suit. So should the suit be a three-piece? Do we need the jacket, the pants, and the skirt?
It all depends on lifestyle. You know, if you find a fabulous skirt and you're inclined towards skirts, you would practically have to put a gun to my head to get me in a skirt or a dress. So I would only I only need to own the jacket and the pant, and there are a lot of people who fall into my category. But if you would wear all of them, you are better off having the pant and the skirt along with the jacket because you exponentially multiply the way you can use this look than if you only have, you know, the pant and the jacket or the skirt and the jacket.
Okay, now question for you.
Encourage people to longer dimension in the jacket, you know, maybe mid-thigh, close to that.
Ooh.
Rather than making the short, which cuts people off.
Oh, interesting. And that goes for all body types and all heights? Longer
pretty much,
rather,
yep.
Mid-thigh.
Well, I mean, I guess
that's
if you're, you know,
jacket.
4'7",
yeah.
You're just going to have it, you know, but you'd be in petite, so it would be, you know,
it might
improved.
Be proportionate. Now,
yeah,
question.
Exactly.
Your book is clearly geared for women, yet you say in your preamble that you have counseled and guided, in terms of style consulting, Bobby Schwartz, you've counseled and guided some of the wealthiest women and men in the world. So for the Patrick Strubies and other guys who are listening, could Patrick pick up your Style Essential book and basically extrapolate from the black suit? Would he want to have a black three-piece suit, meaning pants, jacket, and a... No.
No, this is definitely for women. I've helped clients with this. Guys couldn't pull from this. God love them. They have the best time and the easiest time of dressing. Once I work with the gentlemen, they're done. They don't need to see me unless something special comes up for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So they start wearing things out because everything goes back and forth together, and it's just so simple. It's just beautiful. Women, sadly for us, almost what we're talking about in this book will be sort of akin to what men do, but in only female version of it, you know,
Doing
what women need.
So thank you for that. So sorry, Pat, but you're probably all set and you have all your suits and all your white shirts and all that good stuff. I know you're buying good quality because I know your clients want to see you looking very chic and classy, Pat, so we won't talk about that. Now, Bobby, I mentioned I need you to talk about jeans and belts. I was introduced to blue jeans about 8 months ago by a close friend who said, for God's sake, Bonnie, at this stage in life, you still aren't wearing blue jeans? Go out and get a couple pairs. So I found some nice, casual, stretchy kind. Even if they're too long, I can fold them up underneath or I can roll them up a little bit. I love them. They're very comfortable. And now I live in them, Bobby. But what is the right and wrong way to buy and wear jeans for different body types today? Are they an essential part of the essential wardrobe or not?
They are. They absolutely
are. Okay,
why?
I mean,
we live in America, for heaven's sake, and even the world has adopted the jean disease. But I'm like you. You have to practically pry me out of my jeans. And so anybody can do skinny jeans as long as they have if they've got a big caboose. They want to have what I refer to as a tunic T-shirt or sweater over it so their backside doesn't show. It's unattractive, and if they are larger on the backside, they need a longer top to cover that up.
Okay.
And it really should come almost mid-thigh, but at least several inches below your backside. And then
what about
flare
the leg style?
Jean,
skinny leg, flare leg, what do you suggest?
Well, if you're talking about, so now I'm talking about a skinny jean, you know, the ones that super skinny, and stretchy's good too.
Yes.
It just makes it more comfortable.
Love
but
my dress.
So you've got the skinny jeans, and then you've got flare leg jeans, which really are the most flattering style on literally everybody because it curves at the hip, and then it comes out and it flares at the bottom, so it gives you a balance and is very slenderizing. And I can't say enough for that silhouette. It's not ever going to go away, so nobody needs to worry about it. You want to stay away from the straight leg jean, which is not the skinny jean, but the one that's just cut straight. That's just going to make you look dumpy and old.
Do you remember when, who was it? Jessica, what's her name? Patrick, Bobby, help me. Jessica, yes, the singer, the blonde, who was accused of looking three sizes. Simpson, thank you.
Oh, okay. I
thought of Homer.
Okay.
and the controversy that she was wearing mom jeans and how horrible, and she'd put on three sizes and she was fat and what was wrong with her. Oh, my God, you would have thought the financial markets had crashed. The people were so up in arms about Jessica Simpson and her body, for God's sake. So what was she doing wrong, or was she doing nothing wrong, Bobby? Do you remember that?
Well, the thing is, you can, if you've got extra weight on you, you know, do things that are going to make you look attractive. There are T-shirts that you can get that curve in just below the bust and will kind of flute out, so they stand away from the body. And then if you do the flare leg jean with that top, it's going to hide a multitude of sins. I don't recollect that, you know, I'm not a big follower of Jessica Simpson, so I don't know what she had on. But often people tend to think that they can wear clingy clothes and show their bumps and ripples, and why would you do that? It just makes you look so much larger. So that may have been more what they were, you know, castigating her about than actually putting on jeans. And she maybe did look dumpy because she was dressed in clothes that weren't fitting, you know, they weren't fitting well.
Really? Yep.
And they were too clingy, which is always
okay. We will not forgive her for her sins, but I think she's recuperated since then. Now, the little black dress, does it have to be sleeveless? Does it have to have a certain neckline? What fabric does it have to be? How long should it be? Give us a quick primer or primer if you prefer that.
I would say no higher than the top of your knee. We're not talking going out and clubbing and that kind of a party dress. We're talking about a dress that you're investing in. You know, if you were in your 20s and making this investment, sure, get sleeveless. As you get older, it's with what I refer to, Patrick, close your ears, old person skin on your arms. It's just icky and unattractive. And so, you know, you really want to minimize that. So you push, maybe want a sleeve on it, although I have to say in the design world, as salespeople and having been in the stores and listened to people complain, where are the dresses with the sleeves? Who do they think they're selling to? Good question.
Mm-hmm.
So they're harder to come by, but at least maybe a little sweater or a little jacket you could put over it if you do sleeveless. But, you know, it can be wool. I would recommend a year-round weight wool, almost a tropical weight, because as a wool, you can make it go to more places than if you do silk. Silk's going to mostly be for evening. We're talking about something practical here, so I would say wool.
Bobby, when you talk about investing in fabrics, can the average person you would meet, let's say you're not going to the theater, and you're not, well, nobody dresses in the theater in New York anymore, sad to say. Used to be a dress-up occasion. Airplanes used to be a dress. I used to wear hats on the airplanes. No, I'm not that old, but I love to wear hats. So, you know, nobody's yelling down in front because the seat backs are high, so you take it off and stow it. But point to point is that how many people can really recognize from a distance or even 2 or 3 feet away the quality of the fabric you're wearing? And I ask that question with great naivete because you talk about the level of chic, the level of I would hate to say social acceptability, but your value in your clothes is recognizable by the quality, not just of the cut and the fashion, but the fabric. Who knows fabrics today, Bobby?
It's not about knowing fabrics. It's about recognizing how good something looks on somebody. This is what happens, is they just look and go, wow. And they don't even know why they're saying wow. They just know it looks good. And between the cut and, you know, of course, the construction and the fabric, all three of those things together are what make a designer garment worth paying for. And you mentioned earlier about the people who really couldn't afford it. I am the queen of the discount shopping world because I, you know, and like my favorite pants happen to be our Giorgio Armani collection. They were originally $1,300. I think I paid $90 for them. And that's what I really recommend for the average. Yes, my clients can pay anything. It doesn't matter to them. Yes. But for those of us that are worker bees and, you know, who have a budget, and you're investing in a piece that unless you're going to have tremendous weight loss is not a problem because you can, you know, cut it down. But weight gain, if you're going to stay about the same, these are pieces you will have for years and years and years and sometimes a lifetime.
And you have to take care of them, of course. One more style essential I want to talk about before we go to the both of you. Shameless promotion, what's next for you, Bobby Schwartz, and when is the book really coming out? I'm on page, I don't know what, I'm on page something 12 here, and it's called Essentials, the Crispy White Shirt. I love the word crispy, but I don't know what it means. What does it mean?
It's, you know, I guess it's crisp. I just call it the crispy white shirt. But it's not your usual version of men's tailored shirt that you tuck into your skirt or your pants. This is more of an Audrey Hepburn look. They're a little bit longer. They hang out. They've got some serious style to them. They might have a larger collar that's stiffer, a wider cuff. They're simple but have some interesting detailing on them, as you no doubt could see from the pictures in the book, which...
Yes, very exact.
And the reason that I put the pictures in there was because it would be not understandable otherwise.
Okay, good. Now, I have a question for Patrick. Patrick's been, I want you to talk to Patrick, I want you to talk to Bobby. Patrick, you've been listening. I know you work with women. I see some of their pictures on your website who are part of your business, your SouthCarolinaPreservation.com, and you're married. So how are the women in your life? Do you think they're fashionably chic? I'm not trying to get you in trouble here, Patrick. But do they abide by any of these rules? Do they invest in long-term fabrics and have a core wardrobe? Anything you've observed, or is this all a mystery to you? Be honest.
Well, 100% mystery. I mean, that's without a doubt. But I can speak on observation.
Yeah,
the two things I'll say about my wife is she seems like she aspires to be like Bobby. I think we've learned over time it's better to buy quality, but at the same time you're always looking for a bargain. And
okay.
I can definitely say since I got married that I get much more compliments on my wardrobe as opposed to when I was trying to pick it out myself.
Really? Well, that's a plus.
Oh.
Bobby, any comments back for Pat?
No, I mean, I think that's wonderful, and it often happens because guys bring, you know, you all bring a great deal to the table, but generally style is not one of those things. And so a woman's help is always good.
You know me well.
Now, one quick question for you, Pat, and then I have a couple more for Bobby because we have, 4 minutes left, so we got to skedaddle here. I'll ask Bobby the question. Bobby, you said that bringing a handbag into a boardroom meeting is it's a no-no and can derail a woman's career. Why?
Well, it's not actually the handbag as much as it is the girly clothes. And we were kind of, you know, having fun with that. But really and truly, it's about you need to meet these guys on their level. And when you see, a man who's tremendously successful in the corporate world, he's got on $2,000+ worth of custom, you know, handmade shoes, a $6,000 suit. And the woman comes in looking all in her pink and, looking all girly. And, sorry, they just can't. It's hard to take it seriously.
Okay.
And so that's what that's about.
That's the thing. Okay, good. Now, Bobby Schwartz, you have to tell me. You have 3 minutes left. We're really trucking here. So, Bobby, what's next for you? First of all, let's give your website. Which one do you want me to give?
I think yourultimatewardrobe.com. It's easier to remember.
Okay. And the other one, of course, is the BobbySchwartzGroup.com, but I will spell yourultimatewardrobe.com. So we want everybody to go to your, Y-O-U-R, ultimate, ultimate, wardrobe, wardrobe.com, yourultimatewardrobe.com. You don't even need the www, just spell the damn thing right, yourultimatewardrobe.com. And by the way, it's Bobby, B-O-B-B-I, Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z. When is the book coming out, Bobby?
The book is about to be launched, and but it's available right now on the website, so you can get it there. And then a few very high-end retailers are going to be picking it up. We're investigating China with it at the moment, and then we're on to mass production with it, and it'll be available on Amazon. But right now we've got both a PDF and a hardcover that you can acquire off the website.
Wonderful. Congratulations on that. Any speaking appearances quickly? Where are you going to be talking about this?
Yes, I've got tons of speaking appearances. One is with an women's organization, and I encourage if you've got professional women in your listening audience to check out Lean In. It's a whole other subject, but I'll be talking about Dress for Success for them here in Dallas next month. And we are beginning, you brought up early in the call, people that couldn't afford me. I'm beginning a member site that should launch at the end of this month, at beginning of next, that will give people everything that my clients who pay a lot of money for, they'll be able to get that for a small monthly fee of like $16.99 a month. And learn all about it, have the shopping things, the actual items will be there, then click on a purchase. They can even test it out for, I think, like $4 for the first week just to see if it suits them. But I think it'll be a grand help for people
trying
to make
Bobby.
Their way.
Thank you, dear. I need to give Patrick 30 seconds for what's next for you, Patrick. We're winding down fast here. Talk to me. Patrick Strube, what is next for you?
Yeah, that sounded awesome, by the way, Bobby. SCPreservation.com. Also, the book is on Amazon. It was an Amazon bestseller. Just look for Save Your Retirement. Look for Pat Strube, and it looks kind of like a comic book. And we do
Good,
take
it
clients
does.
From all around the country if anyone needs any one-on-one help.
Good, and I'll spell your last name. It's S-T-R-U-B-B-E, Pat Strube. I'm putting on the outro music. We're 60 seconds out here. Here we go. Pat Strube, Bobby Schwartz, take a deep breath all the way down in your fashionable diaphragm, and let's go. Don't gag on, for God's sake. And we're going to do the shout-out to the world. Find your chic. Find your passion. Find your style. Find your way to be the best you can be and look great and feel even better and live a long, healthy life, damn it, in the best clothes. Here we go. So let's do our moi shout-out. Here we go. Come on. More. Oh, my God. Awesome. Bobby Schwartz, thank you. Patrick Strube, thank you. I'm Bonnie D. Graham, a.k.a. Radio
Thanks,
Red.
Bonnie.
Yes, and navy blue looks great on my car, and black looks great on me. I'll see you all here next week on Read My Lips. Shout out to Lorna, to Laura, to all my good friends. Be fashionable, and be happy. We'll talk to you next time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Here we go. Bye-bye. Mwah.